and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan. This week, Michaela Watkins, Grace Parra, and Megan Gailey join me in studio to talk about shame, shame, shame. Who feels it, who doesn't, and who could use more of it? Alyssa Mastromonaco also joins to discuss why we shouldn't totally ignore opportunistic conservative shouting heads, even though we would really like to. And, as always, our hills. Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. If you have hills to die on that you'd like to send us, you can record a 30-second voice memo on your phone and send it as an email to hysteria@crooked.com. You can also get in touch with us for other reasons that way, but just to let you know, I'm not the only one who checks that email address. So send love notes and hate mail elsewhere, or just don't send them at all. Also, if you like what you're hearing, please rate us and review us on iTunes. It helps people find us, and it helps people know how much you enjoy the show.
Hello.
Hello, darling.
Hello, love.
How are you? Are we doing British accents today? Because I can't do them.
I don't know. I just felt like it.
I mean, I respect that, but I just wanted to warn you that my British accent is embarrassing. This week has been a real bummer. And yesterday, I mean, I started back at like an office job. And so I didn't have to watch the spectacle as it unfolded yesterday. But Alyssa, did you watch Candace Owens?
Yes, I did.
You did. Okay.
I did.
Well, you know, I was thinking yesterday, I saw people talking about her testimony on Capitol Hill on Twitter and social media. And I just sort of checked out of it because I just couldn't do it yesterday. But I felt very nostalgic for a time when Candace Owens was just going to be somebody I didn't have to learn about until she was selling trinkets on QVC. Like, until we're on the other side of her career. But now I feel I feel like now that she's on Capitol Hill, she's somebody whose place in the pantheon of garbage we have to break down a little bit. So, first of all, do you want to explain to our listeners, if they don't know, who Candace Owens is?
Candace Owens, what is her deal? Well, she's a bad person. She's a bad person. She's a right-wing conservative commentator. And I think she's the director of communications for Turning Point USA, which mm-hmm. is a conservative advocacy group led by Charlie Kirk. Blech.
Charlie Kirk. I am concerned about the size of that man's head, but whatever.
And she's done like a lot of, you know, she got famous. People probably first heard her name bandied about when Kanye West tweeted that he loves how Candace Owens thinks about a year ago, this month, actually.
Wow.
And she's also someone that people might remember as being a real, a loud critic of the Black Lives Matter movement, saying that it was a bunch of whiny toddlers pretending to be oppressed for attention. So I think that, in a nutshell, is Candace Owens, and most recently was cited in the manifesto of the gunman who committed the mass shootings in Christchurch, New Zealand, where he said that she was the person who influenced him above all.
Great. So it's a good thing we have her on Capitol Hill testifying.
Thank God.
Yesterday, she was testifying before a panel, and she was talking, I believe, about hate crimes and violence against targeted groups. And both parties get to select who is on the panel, and Republicans picked her, which I think gives you a pretty good example of where they're at nowadays. They're having Candace Owens sitting on a panel that's talking about issues that are, you know, actually real. But she came on, she was on the panel. The big moment from yesterday was when my congressman, Ted Lieu of California, played back to Candace Owens audio of her kind of defending Hitler a little bit, and her face kind of twisting into, I guess her face did some gymnastics. The whole thing was all political theater. It was upsetting. It was demoralizing. But I wanted to make our conversation about her bigger than just yesterday.
And yeah, let's not give her any PR.
I mean, she doesn't really need it. The thing is, like, all of the usual, like, all of the usual suspects were tweeting about how she just totally, like, owned the libs yesterday. Like, Donald Trump Jr. tweeted about her. Jack Probiotic, I'm not going to learn how to pronounce his last name. Jack Probiotic was like, oh, she's totally badass, whatever. It's like, I think that no matter what she does, she could have been on a congressional panel and thrown up and then fallen over into the vomit, and everyone on the right would have been like, fuck yeah, she showed them, you know? So I feel like
basically how they talk about Donald Trump.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, if you were sitting down to play a game of checkers and she came up to the game of checkers with a hammer and just like smashed all the checkers, people would be like, she won the game. And it's like, no, she wasn't even, that's not what happened. But I wanted to talk about her specifically as an example of a specific type of opportunist that exists in the media ecosystem right now, because Candace Owens wasn't always a conservative. In 2015, she was the co-founder of a website called Degree 180, which is a marketing agency that was for consultation services, basically. And there was a blog that went with that website, and it posted a lot of anti-Trump content in the blog. There was some jokes about Donald Trump's penis size, not flattering jokes about his penis size. Owens also said that Tea Party Republicans were quote unquote batshit crazy. She also said the good news is they will eventually die off peacefully in their sleep, we hope, and then we can get on with the obvious social change that needs to happen immediately. This is Candace Owens's words from 2015. So yep. It seems a little odd to me that she's suddenly the poster child of a specific type of conservatism. It seems to me that she was maybe being a bit of an opportunist. And I wanted to talk about where that fits in. Like, have you, Alyssa, you've been in politics for long enough that I'm sure you've seen different generations of opportunists. Does this one seem better or worse than what's come before?
It's terrible. I mean, look, here's the thing. There's opportunism. Look, like I guess like lobbyists build their careers on opportunism. You know, like politicians see like a gap in society, tell you how they can fill that gap. That's also opportunism. There is a difference between that and what I think has come before us and people becoming hateful as like their opportunity.
Right.
You know what I
mean? For the likes.
It's like you want to go viral. So you say, you know, like even if you look at someone like, God help us, like a Roseanne Barr, who's always been a bit batshit, but then has gotten like a lot more batshit. That's almost more tolerable because at least she was always kind of batshit.
Right.
This is like a woman who sees like fame out of becoming of a racist.
Yeah.
And a bigot. Or
well,
like just a hateful
Alyssa,
person.
Alyssa, we're the real racists. Listen to Candace Owens. Democrats are the real racists. She and Dinesh D'Souza have teamed up to find the real racists, and it's us. I just think, have you ever thought about this, Alyssa? I've thought multiple times, like, what if I had no shame and no morals? If someone like me were to be like, you know what? I'm going to become a conservative who yells to camera. That for a living, I'm going to go through a fake public change and I'm going to see where it can take me. Do you think, like, how big a career do you think you have? You ever thought about how big a career you could have if
no,
you just were like, I'm going to be conservative?
Our cats would reject us. We would come home and there'd be cat piss on our beds because they'd be like, you fake bitches. Like, like my cat food's not that expensive that you need to go do this. But no, because like, I just think that like, I mean, I've got IBS. It would be triggered if I became a really bad person.
I mean, Tommy Lauren is one of those people too, who seems as though she's been taking positive reinforcement she gets for being angrier and further to the right and more like more of a cartoon. And she's taken that positive reinforcement and folded it back in on herself. And now she's like a parody of a parody of a parody. And
well, it's like, do you know who else is interesting? Just who came to mind as you were talking. So you know that congressman, Sean Duffy?
Oh my God. He's my parents' congressman. He's my parents' congressman.
Okay.
Rachel Campos.
And he married Rachel Campos, who is now some also loony conservative commentator. I want to be like, girl, you made out with Puck in the real world. Like, I just don't see the evolution.
Yeah, she's terrible. They actually live in my family's congressional district, or that's where they, you know, are based. And like, they're so different than the people that live there. Normally, like Sean Duffy in person is the color of a tangerine. He is so he is so tan, and his teeth are like West Hollywood white. And he's like so just so not how people look or act in northern Wisconsin. And he just really, really, really wants to be a career politician. Rachel Campos is an interesting one because she's been chasing being a like, no, I'm just a mom. Like, I'm a concerned mom. She's been trying to be that on TV for so long, and it hasn't happened for her yet.
Well, she was trying to be Elizabeth Hasselbeck.
Yeah, she was. But nobody can be Elizabeth Hasselbeck, because for as Looney Tunes as Elizabeth Hasselbeck was, she was spectacularly perfect at it. There's nobody that can defeat her at being Looney Tunes.
It's true.
She's the best. She was the Michael Jordan of being crazy.
She was kind
of
the pioneer.
She was. She was.
She was the pioneer for these people. Because where did she came from? What, Survivor?
She did. She was America's sweetheart on Survivor. And then she was, oof.
They get there. Oh my God, have we just cracked the code that some of the looniest got their starts in reality, in the pioneer of reality television?
I mean, our president did. I don't think he would be the president if he wasn't acting like, if he hadn't acted like a boss on TV in a fake show on a fake set. And I think that that's sort of what the media garbage soup that we're cooking in right now is one that elevates people that are the craziest and the loudest and the most out there. And those are the people that end up being asked to testify to Congress.
Right.
And now those are the people that Donald Trump is trying to appoint to be the ambassador to the United Nations. And they're the people that Trump is giving high level positions to within his government. They have no business doing it. And that's why I think it's important for people to pay attention to this thing, even though there are a million, I bet I could list off 100 things right now that are terrible that I would rather do than pay attention to these people. But we just need to just keep tabs on them, I think. I don't think you need to watch Tommy Lahren yell about the NFL into a camera on Fox News to get what she's doing. But I think if Tommy Lahren gets appointed, is asked to testify somewhere, gets appointed somewhere, or gets elevated to more power than she has, then it's something that we should keep tabs on. Okay, well, that's all the time we have for this conversation. Alyssa, as always, thank you so much for joining me, and we'll talk next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye. We have to take a break, but when we come back, more hysteria.
Save big money on everything for your next bathroom project now at Menards. Upgrade your bathroom with Max. With more than 1,000 showers, bathtubs, and surrounds, you're sure to find exactly what you need to add luxury and style to your bathroom. Save big on our entire selection of Max bathroom products. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome back. We have reached the part of hysteria where we talk a lot about something we think about a lot that isn't necessarily in the news, but it's in our heads. First, I want to introduce the wonderful women that I have with me today. First of all, comedian, floral print wearer, Megan Gailey.
Hi.
How have you been?
I've been good.
You've been traveling.
I've been traveling, but now I'm working, so I have to stay here.
You've been working in a room? Mm-hmm. I went back to work this week, too.
It's really lunch and typing, you know?
Yeah.
We're doing it.
Yeah, it's like your whole day leads to lunch.
Even though
it's fun. What we do is
it's
fun.
Really fun, but I get there being like, what's for lunch?
Yeah. And then lunch happens and you spend the rest of the day trying not to snack.
Or then you're talking about lunch, like lunch was good today. While you're trying to also write a television show.
It's like that Maria Bamford bit about people in an office like talking about Quiznos. That's what I think about every time anybody talks about anything. Second, we have Grace Parra.
Hi.
Needs no description.
Thank
everybody,
you.
Everybody knows you by now.
Everyone in the world knows Grace Parra.
You're like the Beyonce of Grace Parra.
Thank you so much for finally recognizing that. Megan's like, wow.
Grace, how have you been? I feel like it's been a minute.
It has been a minute. I'm good. God, what I've also actually been working in a room for a pilot the last few weeks as well. And so a lot of conversations about lunch, a lot of trying not to snack. Mm-hmm. I had soup before I had In-N-Out yesterday. I don't know if you guys have ever had
a pre In-N-Out soup.
Yes, correct. In-N-Out soup.
I'll do a pre meal sometimes.
Yeah, I like a pre meal.
That's an app. You had an appetizer?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, man. I always order too much food when I order takeout, because when I order takeout, I'm at a point where I'm like desperate. And so I'll order like three, and I'll be like, I don't know what I'm going to want when the food gets here. So I order like three different things. And I always feel, this kind of dovetails to the topic we're going to talk about today. I always feel shamed by the takeout people, because they give me like 8 sets of chopsticks. This is enough food for 8 people. Yep. And then I pick it up and I know, I just feel like there's a moment where the delivery person knows that it's just for me.
Yeah.
And it's just, it feels like an aggressive interaction. Last but not least, we have Michaela Watkins joining today.
Hello.
When's the last time you were embarrassed, Michaela?
It's a tri-daily occurrence, I would say. You know, I can't stand it. I have to be introduced first next time, because there's so many things I want to comment on. I'm sitting over here being like, yes, soup before meal. That's incredibly good
soup
for your digestion.
Meal. Yeah. Oh, that's
and,
right.
Yeah, it's very Ayurvedic.
That.
It's very, yeah, it's like a great way to go. I always talk about soup for breakfast. Why are you open to soup for breakfast? You know, part.
I saw Michaela in Austin, and then I had to apologize when I saw her today, because I was like, I was in a wild place when I saw you in that bathroom. I was like, all over.
What happens in Austin? We ran into each other in a bathroom in Austin.
That's crazy.
Of all of Austin during South By, with like thousands of people.
No
we
way.
Just we crossed, and for it was just a moment where I was like, Megan.
And you're like, Megan needs some help.
No, not at all. I was about to go on stage, and I felt crazy. With people I'd never been on stage with, like, oh, let's do improv as if we've been doing a preview.
Oh, dear. That's a lot of stress. It's a lot of pressure right there. Let's feign chemistry.
Well, talking about anxiety, performance anxiety is, I guess, it flows well into what we're talking about today, because the reason people get nervous before they perform is because they're afraid that it'll go wrong and they will feel shame.
Way to make a bridge.
I did.
Maker, Aaron, Ryan.
What?
I don't know. I didn't jump on the singing. And I'm usually leading the singing.
I know.
I was like, wow.
That's pretty impressive. I want to talk about shame, because I think a lot of times the way that we talk about it publicly is as something that's good or bad, rather than just holding it up as something that just sort of is. Mm-hmm. It's a tool that's been used to oppress people. It's a tool that's been used to keep people in line in ways that are actually good. And it's a way that we feel when things happen to us that are unexpected, or when people put things on us that we didn't necessarily want or earn. So it's a personal thing for sure. It's also a social thing. And I think that it's something that a lot of people who should feel it don't. Mm-hmm. So it's this, it's sort of like money. Like the people who shouldn't have money have like so much money. The people who should feel shame, like don't feel shame at all. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to float this question to the whole table. When's the first time that somebody tried to shame you?
I hate to out my dad for this, but like I was the youngest of 3 girls, and my dad really wanted a boy. And I'm Michaela. I was supposed to be a Michael. And Barbies were not allowed in our house. Like we were not a girly group of girls. We did not have any kind of, there was really no vanity that was even okay in our house. In fact, I don't know if it's a combo of Judaism or just my dad's sort of more austere way of raising us, but it was just, you just didn't indulge in fancy fairy tale princessy stuff at all. Mm-hmm. It was really frowned upon. And of course, I had these old books with these that I snuck into my house. No, I'm kidding. It's like contraband. No, but I had, you know, books with, you know, Grimm's fairy tales and all these other things with all these beautiful princesses in it. And of course, I would want to emulate them in the mirror. And my dad walked in when I was sort of dressed up and making faces at myself in the mirror. And I just will never forget the look on his face. It was such disgust. It was like, ugh. And the only reason I remember that is because in my 30s, when I was doing therapy, because none of my relationships were working, I kind of went back to that memory, and I had to sort of unpack it a little bit. And I think that there was this divide that happened in me where my feminine side and my other side, my masculine side or whatever side,
were sort of split in that moment. And I felt like to become sort of romantic or intimate with a guy, I had to kind of put down the jokes and the fun, sloppy Michaela and become like, suddenly I had to morph into like, and now I'm sexual being. And I just, like,
with that voice, hopefully.
Yeah. Take off your pants. And so I didn't know how to like bring the two together. And it took like a lot of work to finally connect those, integrate those two parts of myself again. So,
yeah, I remember, I don't remember, like I have a brain that works, thank goodness, where I, a lot of times like really bad stuff, all but the very worst stuff, I just kind of forget. Yeah. I just forget it even happened. The very worst stuff you hold on to is like your little treasure trove of like negativity that every time something good happens, it's like, but what about this? but I used to, I remember using shame as a weapon when I was a kid. And it's always been something that I've been very attuned to. It's like my superpower is the ability to like make people feel bad about themselves.
That's amazing.
I felt a lot of internalized shame growing up. I was the youngest of boys. So by the time I was born, everyone was so happy that there was a girl. And so I felt very, very celebrated. But at a pretty young age, I, you know, I started struggling a lot with depression and, you know, just issues that seemed beyond what a young girl should be going through. And my brothers sort of like acted out, but were like really cool. And they went to see this counselor to try and help them sort of like curb their behavioral issues. And then when I came around and obviously there was something going on with me, my parents took me to see the same counselor. And after two sessions, I remember him like bringing my parents in and being like, this, she's like above my pay grade. And it was really so embarrassing. And, you know, when you're young and you're struggling with that, you're already ashamed. And then I was like, this man who helped my brothers who are like worse behaved than me can't even deal with me.
Isn't that in front of you?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I don't think he said pay grade, but he was like, he definitely specifically was like, you need to take her to like a specialist that deals in adolescent girls because she's just going through emotional issues that are very, very intense. And so
as a man, I shouldn't be required to understand that.
That's traumatizing. I mean, that's something that's horrible. That can stick with you, you know?
Yeah, I mean, even to like, as we were like looking at this outline and preparing for this, I was like, God, I feel like everybody was like really, really great to me. And it wasn't, I don't fault this man at all because I ended up going to see a woman who truly in so many ways ended up saving my life. And I, you know, I credit my mom with a lot of that for being like, no, she is like doing, I remember it was expensive. And my dad was like, she's fun. Like everybody likes her. She's cute. Whatever. She'll get
she's
over
cute.
It.
It's okay.
And I just wasn't getting over it. And I lost a friend to suicide at a very, very young age.
Oh my God.
And I think that definitely sent my parents into like, oh, we got to deal with this. Yeah. This is real. But I remember being like, oh, I felt different than my brothers in so many ways. You know, they played on sports teams together. My brothers ended up going to the same college. We're in the same fraternity. They're 2 years apart. I'm much younger. And then I was like, not only am I like gender and sex different than them, I'm also like weird. I'm weirder than them.
Yeah, there's a lot of shame that surrounds like mental health issues in different parts of the country, in different cultures. And in some places, it's really normalized for people to seek help. And in some, it's totally not normal. Yeah. And I think that I don't know a ton about your family, Megan, but I do know in the Midwest, it's like totally not as normalized to like seek mental help.
You know, luckily my mom had struggled. I mean, not luckily, I'm sad for her, but she very much saw in me like, oh, I was not treated. And she went on to have a very traumatic eating disorder and a lot of issues. And so I think she was like, if we can nip this in the bud earlier than I got. And she's also a nurse. She's very into being proactive about your health. And if that had not had happened, if I did not have that support from her, you know, I don't think I would be here today.
Wow. I mean, that brings up a really important point. First of all, I'm very glad you're here, Megan.
Yes.
Because you're a delight. But the point that you bring up where, you know, your mother, you talk about your mother struggling with an eating disorder, and you talk about you being a little girl and not knowing what was wrong with you and being behaving fine, but mm-hmm. also having this stuff. I think as women and girls, we direct our problems inward. And that's why a lot of times that we suffer, it's silently and it's in these quiet, like, slow death emotions like mm-hmm. shame, where it's something that we direct like our hate inward, and we kind of it sits inside of us, and it kind of quiets us down, and mm-hmm. it keeps us from being who we should be. And it feels like a very female emotion.
In that moment, I wished that they had never brought me to see this man. You know, mm-hmm. I was like, oh, I'm doing such. I was a smile on the outside, go home and be destroyed on the inside. Oh. And so I was like, I can do that. I'm like really, really good at compartmentalizing. Why don't you just like let me do that? And mm-hmm. now as a grown up, I'm so happy that they didn't let that just keep happening. But I felt so embarrassed and shamed that I had to go to like therapy, mm-hmm. which now, you know, is celebrated. We live in California. This was the 90s in Indianapolis. Yeah. Like it was, you were going up like dark staircases to get to these places.
Yeah. Grace, what was your experience with shame as a kid?
Well, you know, I actually, not to pivot too much, but I was thinking about how shame affects me to this day, and how as an adult, it's something that I think I encounter a lot more often than I'm even cognizant of. The reason this is something I'm thinking about, because I got shamed yesterday in a story that I'll tell you guys about briefly. I have been living in this new place with my boyfriend since September. We love it. It's great. It's great. There are, you know, a few things here and there that we'd been kind of backing up as like, oh, there's like a leaky ceiling we should get fixed. There's a couple doors, like a sliding door that's not working. There's a door between two bedrooms that isn't working, etc. So we through a series of texts, we end up texting with our property manager, who's like, I'm going to come over this afternoon. This was yesterday. I'm going to come over this afternoon and just tell me everything. We'll have a contractor come Saturday. And I was like, great. So I have to do this alone because my boyfriend's working. Not a big deal at all. He and I talk about it in advance. And he tells me, like, I'm really sorry I can't be there. He can't. It's work. It's totally understandable. But the reason that I came to understand that he was feeling bad about not being there is because of what ended up happening, which is this guy comes up and I pull out a list. And immediately this guy's like, oh, God, you have a list. Ugh. Rolling his eyes at me.
Oh, I'm so mad already.
And I say,
I don't need this, Grace. Don't tell
me.
I know.
And I'm like, well, you know, we really love living here, and I don't want to take up too much of your time. I immediately start apologizing. Apologizing, because his attitude to me is, you are making my job more difficult. You also are a woman who's here by yourself. You don't know much about what you're talking about. And the reality is, I don't. I don't know that much about house things. I don't know that much about car things. These are two areas where as a woman, I'll just speak for myself here, I don't feel very knowledgeable. So yes, I tend to ask a lot of questions, and I tend to feel shamed by men who tend to be experts in these areas when I ask a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, that's better than being made to feel belittled or condescended to. But all that was wrapped up in this experience of just being like, this guy at some point yesterday was like, why don't you just become a lawyer? Man, like, you should just become a lawyer. And I'm like, what? Because I'm asking questions about the home that I live in?
Right. I mean, like, it sort of ties into what Megan was saying. Is like, she had shame tied with the feeling of getting help. Mm-hmm. You were asking questions. It's like, anytime we express a need of a man, that we are somehow punished for it, for having a need, because we are supposed to be the need fulfillers and not the need havers.
Yeah.
It seems like shame is something that is used against women and girls to like maintain the social order. Yeah. Like if you step out, if you're like, I need to seek mental health counseling, I need to ask you a bunch of questions about what you're doing to my walls. Mm-hmm. I need to
buy a car.
Mm-hmm. Oh my God, I just bought a car this weekend.
Yeah. Congratulations. How terrible was this?
I don't recommend it.
Yeah.
I don't recommend buying a car. I don't recommend cars at all. I recommend jetpacks. That's my next investment. My next car is going to be a jetpack.
I mean, my sad go-to with like car situations is I walk in, I try and have a full face of makeup on. I'm super, super sweet. I'm doing a little aw shucks. And then I'm like, I have to call my dad, mm-hmm. even though like I'm paying for things. But I make it the assumption of like, who knows where the money's coming from? And mm-hmm. I call my dad, and my dad when it comes to like my safety is going to be a pit bull. So I put him on. We're doing like a good cop, bad cop from across the country. Mm-hmm. And the good cop just happens to be a woman who looks good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's funny because I was thinking that the story of your dad was like, I just need to call my dad, Charles W. Chevrolet. Yeah.
No.
He might have an opinion on how to buy a car.
And the thing is, I don't even think my dad knows anything. But it's just, they're like, my go-to is like, I'll find them a man.
Yeah.
They'll talk to the man and then they'll come and talk to me.
Mm-hmm. That sort of thing, I totally get. I brought my boyfriend with me.
Yeah.
Yep. And I ended up getting a good deal, but I don't know if I would have gotten a good deal if there hadn't been a man there for me. It's like, on one hand, I understand why you would bring a guy with you. On the other hand, it's like, God, what if I were a single mom having to do this and I didn't have a guy I could
ask?
Yeah, that's fucking bullshit. Mm-hmm. Like, how do I stop this? Like, what can I do?
And then fall over each other trying to help you find your car. Because they're just like, we go, this is good. This is going to be good.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Hello, 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 hello.
Yeah, it was crazy. But I think that like for women and girls, it's a way to keep us in line. I mean, even when it comes to, we didn't even get into like slut shaming, which is, I think the term slut is usually the one next to shaming that we see the most frequently.
I let my freak flag hair fly today with my natural curls because like I didn't even, you know, I always had this thing where I just wanted straight blonde hair so badly my whole life because I wanted to assimilate. I wanted to be normal so badly. Mm-hmm. And I felt that I was carrying around this secret that everybody knew that I was a Jew. And of course, it's passed down from like, you know, centuries of people chasing Jews out of everywhere. And in your mind, you're like, oh, that's why Jews became so funny because we're trying to take shame back. We're trying to be like, ha, we're pieces of shit. I know. We know. like Woody Allen is like, I'm such a piece of shit. I can't believe I get to date this lady. We're all just pieces of shit. And it's like trying to take all that shame back and own it and make a joke about it. But at the same time, it's still in there ripping you apart a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Even when you're joking about it, it's definitely like, it's like if you're drinking poison, you're like, I'm drinking this poison. You're still like drinking the poison.
Can I bring up a quick counterpoint?
Yes, please.
I wish more people would feel shame. I'm just going to throw that out there.
So who do you wish would feel? I mean, because I think you and I were raised Catholic,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
Were you raised Catholic?
Yeah, I was as well. Yes.
So there's a guilt shame component of, I think it's a cousin of Jewish shame guilt.
Yeah.
It's not the same thing, but my friends who are Jewish, and when I talk about how I feel like a piece of shit most of the time, they're like, oh, that sounds a lot like how I also feel like a piece of shit. Not the same, but similar. Like, like for me, it was like my Jewish friends, the guilt is like your mom would be like, you never call me.
Yeah.
And my mom would be like, you know, I'm glad you're doing so well that you don't need to call me. Like, it's a different...
Undercut a little bit.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a different flavor, but they're cousins.
Yeah.
But I think that, like, but they're, you know, we feel it. We're feeling it when we remember it.
Mm-hmm.
But there are people that aren't feeling it, Grace.
There's a lot of people in entertainment who do not feel shame. I understand that in order to succeed in entertainment, there has to be an air of confidence. Unfortunately, quiet, thoughtful, reserved... personalities with people who kind of withhold their skills until the moment comes to shine and then they don't talk about themselves that often is very, very rare and it's not rewarded. Why would it? I mean, in social media is a reflection of how we exist in society. The louder voices are the ones that get the most attention. But it unnerves me that I think there's a big difference between confidence and between cockiness. And I think we're seeing a lot of people feel like they have to emulate that air of cockiness in order to succeed, even if it clearly comes from a place of insecurity.
Beautiful.
Even if it clearly comes from a place of not feeling confident in themselves, they're just projecting that because they feel like that's what has to happen. And listen, we're living in the era of Trump. There's a reason that that's happening. Mm-hmm. It's because we're seeing how blustery cockiness can make somebody rise to success.
Well, who knows what came first? You know, the chicken or the egg? Like, I feel like we were sort of heading down this path and he just represents that, you know, that we suddenly, because I don't think there should be shame except for a public, colossal shame, you know?
Yeah.
I, like you said, Aaron, the people who should feel shame don't. So I feel like there has to be this, you know, sort of big wave of shame that goes out to all the people who support
a redistribution
somebody.
Of shame.
Right. We need to,
it
we
goes
need
out.
To,
yes.
The shame goes to the people who support somebody who feels no shame.
Yeah.
Who is incapable of feeling shame and who's doing the most shameful things. Like that, we can send that wave. But individually, one on one, I feel like we have to completely eradicate shame because I feel like it is from shame that most of hateful behavior is sprung.
Mm-hmm. I think that's right.
Yeah. Like homophobia seems like it's born of shame a lot. A lot of misogyny seems like it's born of shame of women. And I think that the confidence thing is an important counterweight. We talked about confidence just the other week. But one thing I've noticed is that people want a shortcut to having the thing that causes the symptom. Mm-hmm. People want they think that the symptom causes the disease. Mm-hmm. Like, so if they drive a BMW, it means that they're successful. Mm-hmm. And in reality, if you're successful, you might earn enough money to purchase a BMW. Also, if you're successful and bad with money, that's what you would do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's like, oh, if I project shamelessness, mm-hmm. then I have nothing to feel bad about. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't work in reverse. You have to like work from the inside out mm-hmm. in order for that to actually be true.
Mm-hmm. I do think there's been a positive rise in sort of like the branding of like, I mean, you'll see even like young adolescents in shirts that are like no shame, shameless, like that kind. I mean, there's a very successful show called Shameless.
Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, and you know, there's some problematic characters on
yeah,
that.
They have some problems on
yeah.
that show.
But I do think that they're the generation sort of like behind us that's in high school now definitely seems like they are not feeling as much shame as we did. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's just t-shirts. maybe it's just hashtags because
right.
there's obviously a rise in the shame they're feeling because we didn't go to school when there was social media. Mm-hmm. And that would have really, really ruined
yeah.
a lot Ugh. For me.
I'm so, I'm sorry to circle back to what you were saying, Grace, because I think it is so interesting that like, that I did start to, you did start to feel a change in the ether when people started to say, no, I refuse to feel bad about this.
Yeah.
And that then toppled into, I refuse to feel bad about literally anything.
Yep. I think that dovetails a little bit with what Megan is saying, because kids should live a life basically free of shame so that it can develop and explore themselves.
Yeah.
But shame should set in when you reach adulthood
as a way
to deter you
yes.
from doing things that are fucked up and hurt people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's like what shame should be. I want to talk a little bit about shame and sex, just because it's something that I think is often closely associated. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, I didn't grow up in a house where we talked about sex at all. Mm-hmm. I remember being in elementary school, or very early elementary school, when we got one of those weekly readers, remember those things that were like 4 pages mm-hmm. and they're like, here's a news story for kids and like pictures of penguins or whatever.
Yeah.
But I remember there was one special that was about AIDS because we, as first graders, needed to know what AIDS was.
Wow.
And it was like, you know, the height of the pandemic, but in Wisconsin, it was like, we didn't really. Yeah. But they handed it out. And I remember our teacher was like, nobody can laugh when I read this aloud. I remember my teacher said the word sex and I was mortified. Mm. I was so mortified because we just didn't talk about it in my house. Mm-hmm. I never got a sex talk. I did have my mom sit me down once when I was like in eighth grade and told me what a period was. But by that point, I'd already had a class called Human Growth and Development, which was a very intense class where we use the correct words for things. And on the first day of the class, we had to go around reading the definitions of things. And so I learned everything I needed to know about sex from school. Mm-hmm. My parents never taught me about it. So even like in my house now, and I'm sorry, Dad, for blowing up your spot. I hope you're not listening to this because this would shame my father. My dad is one of those people who, he's a wonderful father, but we would like as a family be watching The Sound of Music and he would have to get up and leave the room in the scene when Captain Von Trapp and Maria like make out.
Oh yeah, I know. I love
he
that
could,
scene.
He couldn't deal with Ugh. It. So he'd have to get up. That's how like averse to like mm-hmm. any sex stuff my family was. So when I first became somebody who was sexually active, older than probably most people, it became something that was like, I had a little bit of like weird residual shame around it. Mm-hmm. Went away pretty quickly, but it's something that I think a lot of people don't necessarily escape truly unscathed. What are your experiences with shame and sexuality?
Well, I'm happy to report that I grew up not having a ton of conversations about sex either. But my parents in their retired years have become more vocal about sex than anybody else that I know. And my mom is the first one to make jokes about it. My mom's the first one to ask questions that I have no desire to answer about my own experiences in life in that way. And I think it's really charming because I, like you, Erin, grew up Catholic and it was not really discussed at all. I also had three big brothers, have three big brothers. And so they're still very much alive. So they didn't want to hear about any of that. There was just not a lot of conversations about that. Mm-hmm. But that changed, that shifted. And I think that a big reason why there was a shift is because the youngest of my three brothers, who's gay, when he came out, my family's very, very, very accepting, so much so that my parents basically denounced Catholicism in many ways because they're like, well, not in many ways, in all the ways, because they're like, how can we belong to this institution that's not supportive of our son? And so seeing that happen, I could see my parents, it just shifted everything for them, mm-hmm. because suddenly sex became this thing that was not to be discussed. Sexuality was something that was the same for everybody. And the second that my brother came out, suddenly all those tropes that they knew to be consistent within every individual was not the case anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think it opened their eyes, which then broadened the conversation. So it was great. And I love the fact that my parents are in their 70s talking about sex. It's hilarious to me.
That is amazing, and let's get them on the show. Megan, were you ever in a situation in school where you watched a girl be shamed for her sexuality, like high school, college?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was a girl who got thrown out of our church because she, someone in high school made a sex video of her.
She got thrown out of church?
She got thrown out of church, and it wasn't even like a... It was, you know, it was just like a regular Catholic church. I mean, it was very...
The priest said, I'm sorry, this is above my pay grade.
I think he was just like, listen, I've seen the video. My reaction to that very much was like, oh, I'm never having sex. I was like so, so afraid of it. I lied that I'd given a blowjob when I hadn't because mm-hmm. I felt so embarrassed that I had never.
Lied about giving a blowjob.
I did that too. I was really inexperienced.
That's what I'm saying. Like everybody is like,
right
totally.
Up to college. Yeah. I think that's the other side of like sex positivity though. If you like live it, you're in a culture where like all the cool people are like sex positive, but then in your house, it's like, no, sex, sex negative, you end up doing this thing where I was like really well behaved. I never did anything. And I like remember being in social situations where like I have to lie about how experienced I am.
Yep.
And I think that there are women and girls who choose to not have sex early or they don't feel ready when they're in high school or even in early college who feel like they need to pretend. Like it's like a weird backward shaming.
There's no male word for slut. There's just none. And, you know, that was the first word. That was the first way I knew how to put down a girl in my class, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, she's a slut. And especially if you wanted to remove her as a possible competition, you know, mm-hmm. entity. You mm-hmm. were just like, I heard she slept with so-and-so, you know, she slept with the whole football team or whatever, you know. And it's just sad.
Women are sort of to shame what Inuits are to the word snow. We have like 50
Did
different
you know
ways
that the word for shame is Scham. It comes from German, which is vagina. So
what?
No. Really? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What? What a fact.
Yeah, fact. Fun fact.
The Germans, they thought of everything.
Right. Uh-huh.
Man, I remember being in college and Catholic college. I went all the way with it. Catholic college. And I remember my freshman year, there was a case of like a girl who accused members of the football team of sexual assault. Mm-hmm. And the case, when it first was being whispered about on campus, everybody was whispering about her like she was mm-hmm. a slut. Like she was, she always hooked up with the football players, blah, 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 blah. Like it probably didn't happen. It ended up being that all four of them were exonerated. But the way that we are first talking about it when we knew literally nothing about the case mm-hmm. was the first... The way that girls were talking about it mm-hmm. were like, this girl's a slut.
Monica Lewinsky.
Yeah. Monica Lewinsky is a great one to kind of close our conversation on shame on. Let's Mikayla, are you comfortable sharing the Monica Lewinsky story?
You could just, good.
Yeah,
it's my best story. I'm happy. The long and short of it is that I had a terrible, horrific time. Yeah, well, the bit is tipped, but I had a really bad day on Twitter because all the trolls came out when I called our president racist, because he is, And so, you know, it was like on my Twitter and my Instagram and Facebook, and I was just real bummed out about it. And because I hadn't learned privacy controls yet, and now I do. So fuck you. Mm. And you can't get me. And so I went to this party that night, and I never smoke weed, but because it makes me immediately so stupid. And but I was not having a great day, and I thought, why the hell not? And I walked in, this woman was just so kind and sweet, and like I was just like, so what do you do, where are you from? Oh god, I don't know how to socialize. Mm-hmm. And then the long and short is, she said, oh, I know this person because I give talks. I said, what about? And she said, bullying. And then I said, oh, I had a really bad day. She threw her arms around me, hugged me, pulled me in. I was like, good god, how'd this woman read my mind? Like, I needed a hug. I needed a full-on hug. And I felt like all my troubles went away. And then as I was driving home, my friend said, did you have fun talking to Monica Lewinsky? And I wanted to crap myself, because the fact that I said to this woman, whose entire adult life was shredded since she was 22, to say, you know, I had a bad day on Twitter, just mortification, utter total mortification. I didn't recognize her. She's such a goddamn delight. And I would have apologized. I would have apologized, because I, too, fell into that thing where, even at the time, I would think I was in college, and I was like, I know this is wrong. I know that this is wrong, the way we're talking about her. Ooh, but I just thought of a good punchline. You know what I mean? But I don't even know if I launched all the time, because I remember thinking, this is not right. But that's what I'm talking about, Grace, when I'm talking about a grand public Uber shaming.
Yeah, yeah.
But not individual shaming.
Yeah. We need to have a panel decide who gets Uber shamed. And it needs to be a well-vetted panel of professionals who have good morals and like a good...
Shame technocrats.
Yeah.
I think Uber could be shamed for Uber. You know? We could start the Uber shaming right there.
Monica Lewinsky should be on that panel for sure. She can decide who gets shamed and who doesn't.
Right.
She wouldn't shame anybody.
She wouldn't. I know.
I've met her before as well, and she's a friend of Alyssa's, who's one of our other panelists on the show. And she's just, like, lovely. Mm-hmm. She's just a lovely person. I can't imagine the amount of strength that she's had to overcome what she overcame and to carry on the way she's carried on. And she's so inspiring to so many people. I think that's, like, as good a note as any to end on. I'm glad we solved it, though.
We solved it.
We solved it. We solved shame.
We're done?
We're done with shame.
Yay!
We have to take a break, but when we come back, the hills will die on. And we're back with more hysteria. We are almost out of time for this week, but we have one more thing. This is where we take adamant stances on things that don't really matter. The hills will die on. Let's start with a listener hill.
Hey, hysteria women. This is Jen from Edwardsville, Illinois, and here's the hill I'll die on. Camping is absolutely 100% not a vacation. If I have to do everything that I normally do at home, but with fewer resources, in a smaller space, and with a chemical toilet, or worse yet, no toilet, friends, that is not a vacation. That is what you do when you're running from the law. I am a grown-ass lady. I work my ass off all year long, and you know what I want? I want a hotel with sheets and room service. So that's the hill I'll be dying on while I wave at you from my gorgeous hotel while y'all are camping and running from bears.
I love that. That's great.
I feel like there's a lot of nodding around the table, and I'm going to go ahead, and I'm not going to die on that hill.
I'm not.
I love I love camping.
No. I mean, I like drinking, but I feel, I would much rather be. I'm, like, kind of done with Airbnbs, too. Give me a hotel. I want to know where, like, the sheets are.
Yeah. I think the resurgence of hotel is coming for sure.
Yeah, it's coming in my life. Glamping, I guess, but then it's like, I don't want to be in, like, a kind of nice cabin. I'd rather just be...
I think you do it like a combo platter. I think you rough it for a few days and then, you know, go take yourself to a nice place for a night.
Yeah.
Have a really good dinner. Everything will taste better. Mm. Everything will feel better. You'll have such a new appreciation for things.
No roughing. I think this is no roughing.
I love roughing. I love a rough and you follow it up with something really nice.
I'll hike for like 90 minutes. That's fine.
I like a boat.
A boat.
Oh, I hate a boat.
A boat is just a prison.
I like a boat. Like
water. It's a water prison.
It's a water prison.
That's me roughing it.
A boat is 3 hours of me figuring all the ways we're going to die.
Yeah, I guess it's like also thinking about sharks, even if I'm in a lake. I'm like, a shark could probably get in here.
Yeah. Or a psychopath who lives below the waterline.
Oh, yeah. That's
where my brain goes.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Now I'm going to be afraid of
that. No, I'm in the ocean. I'm like, what if a baby washed up? I just have these feelings.
Well, camping, I like it. I like it. I think you have to follow it up with something nice, but I like camping, but I respect the hill. Okay, so my hill this week, don't give balloons as a present of any kind. They are responsibility. Mm-hmm. Like flowers are like, at least there's a responsibility, but at least they're beautiful.
And they smell good.
They smell good and you feel really, you can look at them and you feel special. A balloon is like giving somebody a hermit crab. Mm-hmm. It's like, there's this thing that if I let it go, I have the stress of watching it float away, knowing it's going to like
land in the ocean.
Choke a baby seal. Mm-hmm. And also like, or I'm going to keep it in my house. I'm going to succeed with a balloon. Mm-hmm. I'm going to keep it in my house, and I'm going to watch it slowly deflate and
just
die.
Like aging. Happy birthday.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Happy birthday. This is a sped up version of the rest of your life.
Yeah.
You're going to deflate, and then you're going to be on the ground, and someone's going to throw you in the garbage and be like, ugh, I wish nobody had gotten me this.
By the way, there's nothing worse than standing in line to get balloons to begin with. Party City is a nightmare place. It's a hellscape. It's terrible. I hate it.
Yeah.
So no one is enjoying getting balloons to give as a gift anyway.
Well, I just don't think balloons are a gift.
Congratulations, you had a baby.
I think they're a nice supplement, I guess. But I think they're better supplements in the form
of
chocolate or alcohol.
To an actual present would be one thing, but just a balloon?
Yeah.
I like a balloon animal.
Yeah, that's...
But you mean
a child. Not for me. I don't want to... But like, I don't know. Yeah, if I was drunk, I'd put one on my head. Anything's fine when you're drunk, I guess is what I've realized.
I mean, I have a nephew who really likes balloons. He just likes...
Yeah, because he's a child.
Yeah, but but generally... But then also, if he has a balloon and it gets let go, it's the worst day of his life. And he's always going to remember it. I just, mm-hmm. Just pass on the balloons.
Yeah.
There's other things that you can give
like
people.
Straws. Hard pass.
Yeah. Totally. Mm-hmm. All right. Who wants to go next?
I'm so ready for mine.
Grace, you're raring to go.
Okay. So today, scientists revealed the first image of a black hole.
Mm-hmm.
Have you guys seen it?
No.
I read the headline.
I got up at
7:30. Aaron, it's nothing. It's a blurry piece of shit. I don't understand why we're making a big... I get it. Like, it's huge historically. I understand. Like,
it's
there's
where Lord
a woman,
Jesus lives.
But yes. Yes. There's a woman behind the algorithm that allowed us to take a photo of a black hole for the first time. Congratulations. What am I looking at here? What is this?
Can I see it?
Yeah. That's it. That's the whole thing. I saw that and I thought
it
was
red around it.
It's blurry.
So then if you go in it, you're gone?
Yeah.
I guess so. But doesn't that just look like a like an eclipse? It's not.
You go subatomic?
I think it's a big old disappointment. I'm very happy for the science community, and I know that this is a hot take, but I think the picture itself is a disappointment.
Yeah. Let me push my glasses up my nose for a moment and say that black holes are basically super massive concentrated matter.
Right.
Where the gravitational field is so strong that light can't escape. So theoretically, as you approach the center, your atoms disintegrate.
Did I miss a whole year of middle school?
No.
You're all matter. What is happening?
I learned from a children's encyclopedia. Oh. And when I learned what a black hole was, I stayed up all night being afraid that one was going to get me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was too young.
I
was too young to know about black holes, but they're very scary.
I guess. I mean, that doesn't look that scary to me. That looks like, I just think that in this age of Photoshop and filters.
Give us something to work with.
So you would have accepted it with a Valencia?
Yeah.
100%. 100%.
They you just like sharpen it a little bit.
Just sharpen the contrast.
I mean, why are we more concerned about the hole inside instead of that ring of fire around it?
The ring is like the last, I think it's just a release of energy before everything just kind of breaks
down.
That
is fascinating.
It's fascinating. I'm glad we're talking about black holes. I think that the visual representation could be better.
You know,
so I know it's rude. It's rude.
Want to talk to black hole branding.
There's nothing behind it.
No, it's just like if you looked at it from the side, there would be like matter, but like cones that come. Wow. Yeah, it's really scary. You know, when I was a kid, I was really afraid of it. But just now I was like, what if a black hole swallowed all of us? And I would be fine with
it. Yeah, that'd be okay. I wouldn't want quicksand. As a kid, would you have been scared of that?
Yikes. Quicksand slowly dying in sand?
Yeah. Ew. See, that would be, that's interesting visually.
That's the stuff of nightmares.
Ooh.
Yeah. Watching a tide come in while you're in quicksand. Oh, no. No.
All right, who wants to go next? Megan?
I'll go next. I think bubble tea sucks. I think it's expensive. I think it tastes like sticks. I think if you like, talk about those straws. We're going after tiny straws. It's like, we need to get bubble tea straws gone first because whole schools of fish are getting caught in those. They're so fat. If you, the tapioca is, it tastes like sort of like, kind of hard cum. I mean, it's like, it's so gross. If you swallow one, you could choke on it. I can't believe there's entire businesses existing just from selling bubble tea. Mm-hmm. Y'all gotta branch out because it's matcha.
Oh, I love matcha.
You're wrong.
No,
you're
wrong. Matcha tastes out of like Los grassy Angeles. Knoll.
I'll kick. Yeah, that's weird.
I love it. I love drinking
grassy
knoll.
I don't want to drink dirt.
Here's what I'll say about bubble tea. I agree with you that it's a scotch much. But I love like 3 to 4 sips of bubble tea. I don't want any more after
that. That's a waste of money. I think that's how everyone feels. Mm-hmm. But they're like, they want to like it, and it's not. I don't believe anyone really likes matcha.
I like that texture
bubble
so
tea.
Much.
I do too.
Ooh. I don't know what it is.
I like it too.
I love hard cum, you guys.
I mean, who doesn't? Just you know, really? Let's be big enough. We can admit it.
Yeah,
Michaela,
like somebody left the cap off the penis.
Yeah, and then it's coming out in pellets.
Yeah,
pellets of cum just shooting down your esophagus.
Guys, this is the blue. This is our first video.
Sorry,
and this is. Literally, my dad is going to cry.
I'm sorry, Mr. So Ryan. Sorry.
But you have the power to edit all this out.
That's
so.
True.
Yeah, that's true. But we're not going to.
You can leave me.
We're not going to. We're not. You know what? We need to be more cum positive. Michaela, do you want to go last?
Oh, sure. This is probably very banal because anytime you talk about cars and traffic in L.A., it's like, but does everybody know the goddamn rule about when two cars are trying to pass each other on a hill? Does everybody know the rule?
It is you're supposed to pull over if you're the one with the like cars parked on your side.
Wow.
So I'm fucking your life up.
Yeah, you're fucking my life up.
What's the rule?
The rule is the person going uphill has right of way.
Oh, that makes sense.
That's that makes sense.
The rule.
That makes sense.
It doesn't always make sense because of the car situation, Aaron. You have a great point, but you would fail traffic school.
Wait, but if you're going
which
up
I have
because
to
it's hard
take twice.
To stop. You know, like I've definitely gone gone back on like in Beverly Hills before and been like, I'm gonna ruin
trucks
this Tesla.
Don't have the brake capacity always to like pause. So like once they're in motion, they got to kind of chug up the hill.
Right.
Yeah. So if you're coming downhill, you'd think downhill would have right away because you're like, I got no brakes.
Yeah.
Get out of the way.
Also, it's fun. It's fun.
Yeah.
Don't interfere with my fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's
so that is the hill.
That's
good. Okay.
You actually may die.
You might die. Because you're going to be so.
You're going to get
in a nut pulling over. Going up this hill, and then Michaela gets involved in a slow speed collision.
I know, because I get really, I will die on the hill of abstinence.
You're like with a Honda Odyssey, you're just like, that's, I think the part of the reason why that even has to be a rule is because cars are so big now.
Yeah.
It's like driving
a big car in LA. What so a nouveau riche piece of trash.
Oh
you
my
are.
God. I just got one, but it's a
no,
plug-in one.
I saw it. It's cute.
No. It's a plug-in. It's a hybrid. It's electric.
Cute.
But I get the finger constantly and I feel like a douchebag in it and I don't know how long this can last.
Oh man.
I'm talking like a giant.
Oh,
like a Texas truck.
Yeah,
like a truck. In Texas. Big old
for work.
SUVs. Sure. I saw a murdered out SUV in my neighborhood recently.
A what?
Murdered out SUV.
What does that mean?
Like all black matte on the outside.
Oh, is that the word?
That's murdered out.
That's
yeah.
great. I learned something today.
Yeah. And it wasn't about black holes.
Wow. It's about black cars.
That seems a bit too much to me.
Okay. Well, those are the hills that we're going to die on this week. I'm going to have to come up with a whole new one next week because I have to be here every week and I keep having to come. It's like, the other week I did one about serial characters stealing from each other all the time, which I was pretty proud of. But it was really scraping the bottle of my,
like
the
Lucky
bottom
Charms?
Of my brain. Yeah, there's a steal.
Like the Hamburglar?
Yeah, it's like a theft-based culture in the serial world. That They're always stealing from each other.
I think that was a good observation.
Thank you. Anyway, we got to wrap up. Grace, Megan, and Michaela, thank you for joining me in studio today. Alyssa Mastromonaco, thank you for joining us over the phone. There will be more Hysteria next week.